This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Something's Brewing, our Texas Longhorn football recruiting podcast here on the Yak, hosted by our friends at the Yak. I'm your host, Jason Sukumil, back for what'll probably be a pretty quick hitter. We got some things to talk about over the last week and a half or something that have gone down. So we'll get into breaking down some things here before I head off to do some dad duties this evening, as it's Tuesday night. Getting ready for, we got baseball playoffs going, obviously college football's going, NFL's going, the NBA finals start tomorrow night, Wednesday night. So, man, yeah, COVID has sucked, but boy, it's kind of fun this time of the year. We got a little bit of everything going on. So not normally the case, but man, we've got some exciting playoff action and just the start of college football going down. The Longhorns are 2-0, as probably everybody listening to this certainly knows, and I still don't know what to make of this Texas team. I thought coming out of UTEP, you know, they looked like world beaters against UTEP. A couple, you know, you wanted to see more pressure from the defensive line. You wanted to see their offensive line play a little bit better than they did against UTEP and kind of dominate the line of scrimmage. But you know what? Hey, they still kicked the crap out of them. So I came out of that game thinking, hey, this is a really good Texas team, but I need to see them prove it a little bit more, because I'm not completely sold knowing that the opponent was one of the worst opponents I'd seen Texas play in many years. And what happens, Texas goes up to Texas Tech, goes up to Lubbock last week, and probably, again, everybody probably watched the game, but the Longhorns need a miracle comeback, have to go into overtime. They get an onside kick, they score, they go for two, they go into overtime. You know, I don't know. I'd be curious. I'd like to go look at that. I hadn't really thought about this until I'm kind of talking out loud, but ESPN has that win probability predictor during the course of the game, and that number fluctuates, goes up and down, or who's going to win and what the percentages. I got to think when Texas was down by 15 points with a few minutes left, I got to think their win percentage was seriously like 1 or 2%, but somehow Texas pulls it off. They get the win. They're 2-0. Credit to the team for fighting back. But now I'm kind of back at square one, because I think I even wrote in my prediction for that game, I said, hey, that game to me was going to tell us a lot about this Texas team. If they went out there and kicked the crap out of UTEP, or I'm sorry, of Texas Tech in Lubbock, the way most people thought, I mean, the odds makers had Texas at 18-point favorites, so, you know, close to 3 touchdown favorites. Then, you know, that to me, I was like, hey, that kind of takes me back to the Mack Brown teams that used to just go out and dominate those mediocre to sub-mediocre opponents. Well, Texas didn't do that. So now that makes me wonder, is this the same type of Texas team that we saw last year and even the year before when they won 10 games, and certainly in Tom Herman's first year, where they're going to be in dogfights pretty much every single week against the Kansas States of the world and the TCUs of the world coming up this weekend? I don't know. You know, I don't know if that was just a one-game anomaly, the first road game, the first conference game. I don't know what to make of it, but good news is for everybody listening, Texas got the win. The bad news is, didn't instill a lot of confidence that this is a college football playoff caliber team, maybe a Big 12 championship caliber team, but that's more, you know, a reflection of the Big 12 than it is that I think Texas looked that good. I mean, the best news you can say, hey, at least Texas is in Oklahoma, who got beat in come from behind fashion at home by Kansas State. But anyways, let's talk a little bit about recruiting. As I sit here and record, it's Tuesday early evening, and the big news we're kind of tracking this week, or not kind of, we are tracking this week, and it's been tough to track, man, but it's Andrew Makuba, the linebacker from Austin LBJ. He's going to announce his decision on Thursday. And Makuba, of course, is a talented safety. He's got offers from all over the country. And I talked to Makuba late last week. I think it was Thursday, because I put some notes in our war room on Orange Bloods, if I believe that's right. And he told me then it's down to Clemson, Texas, and Louisiana State. And he kind of mentioned to me, yeah, you know, there's really two of that group that are kind of separated from the pack. Well, it's no secret. It's a Texas-Clemson battle. I think LSU is just kind of thrown in there just to kind of make it a little more attractive, a little more mysterious, if you will. But the decision's not going to be LSU. Okay, so the decision's going to be Austin or Clemson. And, you know, Makuba's really good, man. He's really good to talk to. First off, he's a really classy kid. He's very accessible, which I like as a reporter, of course. And, but he's also very intelligent that he doesn't give much away when you do talk to him. So it's really tough to read what he's thinking. When I talked to him on last week, he told me, hey, man, I still am torn. I'm not decided. And he said, I'm probably going to try to decide over the weekend. He wanted to get his game out of the way on Friday, and he wanted to sit down and kind of think about things on Saturday and Sunday and make a decision. Well, I was told as of yesterday, he was still torn between Texas and Clemson. Now, to the point when I wrote about it in my 3-2-1 column on Orange Bloods, I said, hey, I'm not expecting this. I haven't heard this, but it wouldn't shock me if he wanted to push his decision back, if he's that torn between Texas and Clemson. Well, what I'm hearing literally on Tuesday afternoon, I think he is going to go ahead and announce on Thursday. Looks like he has made a decision. I checked around. I kind of kicked some tires. I don't think he's told either Clemson or Texas of his decision. I don't know what to make of that. I know he hadn't told Texas. So if he hasn't told Texas, sometimes I think, well, that's probably not a good sign because maybe he has told Clemson. Or maybe he hasn't told either of them. But I know he hadn't told Texas. This is still a very much a guessing game, and it might be that way until he announces on Thursday. So, you know, what's the draw to Clemson? What's the draw to Texas? Well, in talking to Andrew and talking to a couple other sources, with Clemson, it's pretty easy. I mean, they win national championships. They've been competing for them every year with Dabo Swinney there. He just has a really good relationship with Swinney and with Brent Venables. Their defensive coordinator has done a really good job there. Those two have been really heavily involved. You know, he likes everything about Clemson, but he hasn't been able to visit Clemson. And he also knows that, hey, there's a chance, you know, if he goes to Clemson, yeah, he's really sold on Brent Venables, but Venables' name is brought up every single year with every high-profile head coaching job in college football. So, you know, I think in the back of his mind, he's thinking, hey, if I go there, you know, there might be some coaching turnover. Who knows if Dabo Swinney will be there for 4 or 5 years. So he's thinking about that. I think if he had been able to visit Clemson, I think this would probably be a slam dunk in Clemson's favor. But he hasn't been able to visit Clemson. He's been on the Austin campus 4 or 5 times. I mean, the kid lives 15 minutes from campus. He's got friends on the Texas team. He's very close with his family. He's got 2 younger siblings. He likes Chris Ash. He likes Tom Herman. So if you're asking me which way it's going, man, I keep going back and forth. I favored Texas for a while. Then I kind of started thinking maybe it was going to go Clemson's way, but then he decides to announce his decision without having been able to visit Clemson. I know there's confidence from people I've talked to on the Clemson side, so that gives me a little bit of reason for pause. But I do think those people are kind of reading between the lines. It's the same way I'm trying to do. I don't think anybody's been told anything definitively, but I just keep going back and forth. It's Tuesday afternoon. I hope I'll have a better grasp on this one by Wednesday night, but no promises. Andrew's a tough kid to read, and if I do, I certainly don't want to steal the kid's thunder anyways. But right now, man, I mean, this is kind of a cop-out answer, but it really is about a 50-50 shot for me. I mean, I'm so slightly favor Texas just because it's very rare that a kid commits to a school without having seen it. But then again, it's 2020, it's COVID, everything's been turned on its ear and turned upside down. So I guess nothing should surprise me. I think Andrew, listen, oh, this is tough, man. I think Andrew probably deep down inside favors Clemson. I do. But I also think he knows that Texas could be very good for him. The fact that it's close to home, close to his family, the fact that he's familiar with Texas might be enough to let Texas win out in this race. Like I said, if he had visited Clemson, my pick and my money would be on Clemson pretty confidently. But as it stands, I just think there might be enough little nuances there that he's not comfortable enough with that might push this one Texas's direction. So that's what I've got on Andrew Mukuba. If you're looking for any definitive answers, I don't have them. I don't think anybody else does either. He's done a really good job of playing this one close to the vest. So I don't think we're going to – probably not going to know the answer until he decides and announces his decision on Thursday. Let's go ahead and bounce around from there, and we'll talk about a couple commitments that – recent commitments that did go Texas's way, and we'll take them in chronological order. So the first one would be from Jalen Gilbo, the 2022 cornerback out of Port Arthur Memorial High School. This one happened as I look it up, it was September 19th, so it's actually been exactly 10 days as I record this. Kind of happened out of the blue in a weird kind of way. I say out of the blue. I had a Jalen Gilbo commitment story written for like a month, so we knew it was happening. We just didn't know when. And I was out running some sort of errand. I'm usually at Home Depot or Lowe's. That seems to be the story. I can't remember where I was exactly, but Jalen Gilbo pops his commitment, and I'm scrambling around on my phone trying to get it posted on Orange Bloods. I think I had to have my man Dustin McComas post it for me, but I had a story written and in the admin and all that. Just had to make it live when I got back to the house. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was driving home. That's right. I was in my car, so I couldn't even post it from my phone. That's what it was. But I had notifications set up, so when he tweeted that I would get a notification. So, again, knew it was coming, just didn't know when. So as luck would have it, I'm driving down Ronald Reagan here north of my house, and I see the phone light up, and then, damn it, Jalen Gilbo committed. So I'm on the Bluetooth and with Dustin, and, hey, can you post the commitments onto the board. I'll be home in a minute and I'll post a story. But, you know, Jalen Gilbo, again, it was kind of an interesting one to track because he put out a top five probably about 2 weeks prior to his commitment, and it did not include Texas. It had schools like Alabama and Penn State was in there, and Oregon, I think Texas A&M. I don't remember who the fifth one was, but it was his mind was already made up for Texas before that. That was just a total ploy by Jalen to kind of threw everybody off the scent a little bit of his trail. Most people knew he was going to Texas or figured he was going to Texas, so he wanted to kind of confuse people and, you know, not have people pay too much attention to all the early crystal balls and Rivals feature cast picks that were in for Texas. He thought, hey, maybe if I put out a top five, maybe this will throw people off and they'll think those picks were not accurate, and then, you know, and then I'll surprise people when I commit. So he did put out a top five. I posted it on Orange Bloods, and you kind of have to. And I said, hey, I'm not changing my future cast from Texas because we kind of knew what was going on behind the scenes there. But he ends up committing to Texas on September 19th, and big commitment for Texas, their first defensive commitment in the 2022 class. He joins, you know, two big offensive commitments for Texas from, of course, Quinn Ewers, the quarterback, and Faison Wilson, the wide receiver. But Jalen Gilbo gives him a nice kind of building block for that defensive class, and another good get for Jay Valai. He's a Rivals 250 member, cornerback with good size, good physical presence, 6 foot, 175. You know, people knock him a little bit, and I can't say it's not warranted, but, you know, you look at the film, and he plays a lot faster than what he seems to test. But he ran a 4.82 at the opening or one of those camps where they actually time him. So probably a slow surface. A lot of things can play into that, but he's not going to be a 4.4 guy. He never is, but he makes up for it with good size. He's physical, has a really good knack for just making plays on the ball and in the run game at the high school level. So big pickup there for Texas. They got now their first, like I said, first defensive commitment in that 2022 class. Gives Texas three commitments overall in that 2022 class. And one of them, of course, being from a five-star quarterback. The other two are from Rivals 250 members. So Texas is off to a really good start to that class. Just need to keep building that up. And then the other commitment came last week from offensive lineman Max Merrill. It came actually just, a few days ago. It came on Friday, Friday afternoon or Friday at lunchtime. But, you know, Max Merrill's an offensive lineman. He's a 2021 offensive lineman. If you follow recruiting, Texas Longhorn recruiting, which you wouldn't be listening to this podcast if you didn't, you know that 2021 offensive lineman or offensive line recruiting has been a chore for Texas. So that was a nice get and a much needed get for Texas to land that commitment. They have commitments, of course, from Hayden Connor, from Katie Taylor, one of the, he might even be the earliest commitment in this class now that you've had Jalen Milroe peel off his commitment. You had Quay Davis. I think those two were the earliest commitments. Now, I think as it stands, I'd have to pull up the commitment list, but I think Hayden Connor is the earliest commitment for Texas in the 2021 class. A little sidetracked. I got a little sidetracked there. But anyways, Texas has a commitment from Hayden Connor as I pull up this commitment list. Come on, Paige. Work for me. Hayden Connor was or is, in fact, Texas's earliest commitment. Juan Davis being second, then Billy Bowman, Derek Harris. Man, those seem like forever ago. July 23rd was when Hayden Connor gave Texas a commitment. So they have Hayden Connor. Texas's Michael Mislinski, the center out of Jacksonville, Florida. I actually talked to Michael this week and just kind of checking in. He told me he's up to 290 pounds, man. So that's a pretty good start for a kid who's, you know, early on in his senior year of high school. I know people talk about Mislinski. They talk about Max Merrill as being these developmental prospects. And there's probably some truth to that because pretty much every offensive lineman is a developmental prospect just in terms of the physical strength they need and you know, getting in the strength and conditioning program and gaining weight usually. But, you know, Mislinski's 6'3", 290. Max Merrill's 6'5", 280, man. So, I mean, he's 280. It's not like this is some string bean 255-pound offensive lineman coming in. Now, 280 on a 6'5 frame is still pretty lean. They're going to want to put some weight on him, and that'll happen. That'll happen pretty quickly. So, do I call Max Merrill a developmental prospect? He probably is, but again, he's not, you know, we've seen Texas recruit guys way back when they were 250, 255, and you've really got to put weight on those guys. Merrill's at 280 early in his senior year of high school. You got to figure he'll be 290, probably 295 by the time he gets to the Texas campus. Actually, I don't know if he's an early enrollee or not. I mean, I have to go back and look through my notes. But, you know, nice pickup. You know, Texas, he had some other Power 5 offers. You know, if we're being honest, I mean, Texas has missed on a lot of guys, a lot of offensive linemen, and they kept going down kind of this pecking list. You know, Jack Lehrer picked Stanford. Obviously, Tommy and James Brockermeyer they missed out on. Bram Walden and Jonah Miller were two offensive, out-of-state offensive linemen who went to Oregon. Donovan Jackson early on committed to Ohio State, but they made the offer to Max Merrill. He made a pretty quick move. You know, and I like the pickup. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say, hey, that takes out the sting of losing the Brockermeyers. I mean, it just doesn't. Clearly, it doesn't. And you have to land, at some point, Texas has to start landing those types of players if they really want to elevate their offensive line player. But am I going to sit here and say that Max Merrill's not going to be a starter for this program, you know, by the time he's in his second, third, maybe fourth year in the program? No, absolutely not. I mean, this is a guy, obviously, he's got good height, that's 6'5". You know, he's really athletic. If you watch the film, he moves really, really well. So as he adds frame, if he can keep that adds weight to his frame, if he can keep that athleticism, this is a guy with some potential. It just might take some time. I think Max told me his dad was like 6'7", played college basketball. He has an uncle that's, I think, 6'8", 300. So he still may have some growth ahead of him. I mean, this kid has some potential, but we're talking about potential. Whereas when we're talking about Tommy Brockermeyer and Donovan Jackson and Bryce Foster and Savion Byrd, yeah, you're still talking potential, but you feel pretty confident that those dudes are going to be major players at the collegiate level. They're going to hit their potential. So nice pickup for Texas. It gives them a much-needed offensive tackle in this class, a pure offensive tackle. You know, Mislinski, I said, is a center guard, more of a center. Hayden Connor, it's kind of a combo guard tackle. Max Merrill's a true tackle. Now Texas needs to find maybe another one, and then they've got to hit a home run in that 2022 class. Herb Hand does, and, you know, I don't know. I still think they have a lot of work to do there. But bottom line is Texas got a commitment, needs to be celebrated. Let's see how he develops over his senior year, and then once he gets on campus, how his body develops. But that gives Texas three offensive linemen, so that was a nice step in the right direction. Beyond that, I mean, I mentioned Makuba. You know, Terrence Cooks, the linebacker out of Shadow Creek, had told me that he might commit on October 1. I don't think that's happening. I've reached out to Terrence and waiting to hear back from him. But if he was committing October 1, he would have put that on Twitter by now. So he's I love Terrence, great dude, but he's been all over the place with his commitment schedule. So I don't expect him to make a decision October 1. We'll see if it happens even in November. At one point, he was talking about doing it at an All-American game. So, I mean, who knows? That one could go on for a while. He's all over the place. You know, you've got guys like Jatavion Sanders, had a breakout game in his first game for Denton Ryan last week, 7 catches, 122 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He had a beautiful one-handed interception for a pick six that he took back to kind of seal the win for Denton Ryan. Billy Bowman had a touchdown catch. Jonathan Brooks, the Texas running back, is off to a fast start. So, you know, these guys that Texas has committed, the season's just getting started for a lot of them. Jonathan Brooks has been playing for a few weeks. Most of the other guys started last week. You know, they're really off to a fast start. So that's a good sign. Austin High plays this weekend. Charles Wright, the Texas quarterback commitment, will be playing at Pflugerville Conley. I've got a credential request in there. I'm hoping to go see that game so I can kind of get a good look at Charles Wright firsthand. So, you know, things are kind of starting to pick up. We're still in a dead period. It's been extended till January 1. So just a weird time to be covering recruiting, man. We're talking Zoom calls, and every once in a blue moon, you'll have these player-led visits where they'll go to campus and just kind of walk around the campus, but they can't interact with the coaches, and that's not changing for the next few months. So I don't know, man. It's kind of a weird time. It's just kind of, again, everything's turned upside down as it stands with COVID. But keep hoping we'll get some normalcy in the recruiting world soon, but it's not going to happen until at least January 1. So right now, Texas sits at, they're at 18 commitments, and people ask me, okay, how many are they going to take? How's it going to fill out? Well, that ultimately probably will come down to, you know, who wants to come aboard. I mean, listen, if 2 or 3 offensive linemen want to come aboard, and 2 of those names are Savion Byrd and Bryce Foster, you'll take them. If the Brockermeyer brothers want to flip their commitments, which I'm not expecting, I don't mean to get everybody excited, but if they made that call, you're going to take them. I don't give a damn if you're at 25 commitments or what the number is, you're going to take them. But I did rank the biggest priorities for Texas in this class as it stands, in-state priorities, with the offers they have on the table. And I put Savion Byrd first just because he's a tremendous talent. B, he's at the offensive tackle position where Texas could certainly use another body. Savion Byrd, the offensive lineman out of Duncanville, of course. I don't think Texas is in the lead there. I think it's probably LSU or Oklahoma. But, hey, man, if somehow Texas could make that happen, that would be a huge win. Bryce Foster is still out there. I got him 2. He's an offensive guard, so he's an interior guy. That bumps him a little bit below Savion Byrd. But listen, man, he's a 5-star prospect and kind of similar with Byrd, man. I mean, I don't think Texas is a team to beat, but, boy, if you can get Bryce Foster on that commitment list, that's a big pat on the back for the Texas staff. Shamar Turner, defensive lineman. Albert Regis, defensive lineman out of LaPorte. You know, Turner gets all the headlines. Regis doesn't because he doesn't talk much. But Regis is a pure defensive tackle who, you watch his film, man, this is a guy who moves really, really well. I think he's being a little bit slept on, and part of that's because he doesn't draw a lot of attention to himself. But I think that'd be a big get, man. So I've got Shamar Turner, Albert Regis high on that list. And then you get guys that we talk about a lot, guys like LJ Johnson, the running back, Terrence Cooks, I mentioned, Makubo, I talked about at length. So yeah, there's still some pretty heavy hitters on this, these in-state offers that Texas is still chasing. So, you know, this recruiting class still has a chance. I mean, right now it's ranked 15th in the country. People ask me, is it going to get into the top 10? I don't know, man. They're going to have to close on a guy like Shamar Turner, like LJ Johnson. Certainly landing one of those offensive linemen would help. So I think top 10 is doable if they get LJ Johnson, as I expect. If they get Shamar Turner, I think that puts them on the fringe of that top 10, you know, which is a damn good class. Not quite probably where we thought it would be this time last year, where people were talking about this class being the number one class in the country. But when you're whiffing on guys like the Brockermeyer brothers and Savion Byrd possibly going elsewhere and Bryce Foster, I mean, it hasn't gone quite as well as everybody thought, but still has a chance to be a really, really good class, stack on top of these other really, really good classes that Texas has put together under Tom Herman and his staff. That's how you build competitive championship-type teams. You can't just have those top 5, top 10 classes one every 3 or 4 years. You've got to do it consistently every single year. So we'll see if Texas can close on some of those guys. We might have some decisions coming up. Savion Burds told me he might move his decision up. Shamar Turner's probably not going to decide now until January. LJ Johnson's a possibility. Terrence Cooks. Makuba's obviously going to announce this week. So the picture will start to come into focus a little bit more coming up. Let's see where this roller coaster ride takes us over the next couple months. So that's what I've got this week. Ladies and gents, I'm going to take off and go, like I said, do some dad stuff, take my daughter to her practice and run some errands and do some other things while she's working. So you all have a good week. I appreciate everybody listening. I'm Jason Sukumel. This is Something's Brewing, hosted by our partners at the Yak. Everybody have a great week. Stay safe, stay healthy, and I will talk to you soon. Take care.